Welcome again to the Cannabis Investing Podcast, where we speak with C-level executives, scientists, and law and sector experts to provide actionable investment insights and the context with which to understand the burgeoning cannabis industry. I'm your host, Rena Sherbel. Hi again, everybody. Welcome back to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. It's great to have you listening with us as always. I'm super excited to get this episode out. I'm talking today to Emily Paxia, who is a co-founder and managing partner of Poseidon Asset Management, who is one of really the first movers in the cannabis investing space. They've been at it since 2013. And I think Emily, who started the company Poseidon with her brother Morgan, and isn't that exciting to start a company with your sibling? And Emily talks about that today. And they've really established themselves as trailblazers in the cannabis industry, one of the first to do it. And that trailblazer mentality and that insight and that vision that they had to start a cannabis investing firm way back all those years ago before there was so much excitement around it. And Emily brings a lot of that insight today, especially given the timeliness of what's happening in the sector, disappointments on the political landscape, excitement vis-a-vis states and other developments, but a lot of questions around valuations and what cannabis investors are supposed to be doing right now. A very edifying episode. I hope you agree. I hope you enjoy. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice of any sort. I am Long Trueleaf, Chiron, Isracan Biosciences, the parent company, Air Wellness, and the ETF MSOS. You can subscribe to us on Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher. Emily, welcome to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. Really, really happy to finally have you on the show. It's been a long time coming. I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
It's a pleasure of mine. I'm excited to have you on because I feel like you're one of the trailblazers in the cannabis investing world. Yes, that's right. You heard that correctly. So talk to us about blazing that trail and how you got started. I am especially interested in starting something with a sibling and how that works. So you can give an anecdote or two if you want, but I'm interested to know how the origin story, how it all got started with Poseidon.
Yeah. So we grew up in a home with a family business. Our father had built his own real estate company actually by restoring old cars and showing them and raising money through doing that endeavor and then investing into his own real estate. And then our mother was a CPA and a real estate agent. So she was a part of the business as well. So they had kind of built their own little empire. We saw what it was like to not really. I mean, it was in Buffalo, New York. It's very modest, but you know, it was good to see how they worked together and they were very different in many ways. And so we saw how that worked out. And then unfortunately, you know, we lost both of them to cancer at quite young ages. And so, I co-founded the business with my brother, Morgan, and we're very different people, which I think works very well because we're kind of a lock and a key system to building a business. And we have a middle sister who we love and enjoy, but she's in education. So she's in a little bit of a different field, but we came together. You know, it was one of those things. We started talking about it back in 2012, and there were a whole lot of people who wouldn't take something like this so seriously, but you know, I have to give my brother credit for being a visionary and taking it seriously when I called him from San Francisco and said, I think this could be a generational opportunity really to build an industry and do so together. So that's how we got into the space. And, you know, I think we know that having that background of having lost people to cancer and hearing about cannabis as a palliative care option, albeit not legal in every state, is something I think gave us a really open mind about considering it more seriously than other people.
Absolutely. I feel like, were you connected to the cannabis industry at first? Were your parents sickness? Did that have like a connection with cannabis? Was it pre-existing?
No, you know, so grew up in the 80s, you know, Nancy Reagan did her number on me and us, I would say, you know, scared the dickens out of us about what it's like to get involved with illicit drugs or black market drugs, as they called it back then. And I think, you know, what I had known is my father was a verified hippie for sure. No question. He was at Woodstock. He's in the movie Woodstock. I had always known that he'd grown his own cannabis before we were born, allegedly before we were born, who knows, could have been after. But I just remember a dialogue in the household where that my parents weren't big drinker. Well, my mom, after my dad passed away, she did enjoy her wine, but they weren't big drinkers. And instead my dad, I remember hearing, you know, he always used to say he preferred, you know, at the time called it weed, preferred weed to drinking, but weed was not legal. And I don't think I really, you know, registered what that was about. I just remember hearing about it. I remember people like kind of thinking my dad was kind of a contrarian guy. And, you know, he did not consume cannabis as far as I know when we were around, because it was illegal and he was a super protective dad. You know, they say the wildest child becomes the strictest parent. So he was definitely, not doing that. And then it did come up when he was in hospice care. I mean, we lived in Buffalo, New York. It was not legal, but it kind of came up as like a whole thing when he was on this litany of medications and every single one of them had a side effect that then you take something else to alleviate that side effect. And it's the most non-virtuous cycle you can contemplate. So I think that's how it entered into our presence, our kind of consciousness, if you will. And I think it was just something we took seriously. But that being said, being a kid who wanted to get into college, who wanted to be like the, you know, little star kid, I was in the DARE program and, oh, you know, wow. did that
look
whole
at
thing.
You now.
Look at me now. But you know, I think that was a product of the time that I lived in. And honestly too, you know, I had of course tried cannabis in later years of high school, early years of college. Part of being an unregulated illicit market product, it was way too strong for me. I did not have a great experience on it. And I thought cannabis is not for me. Mm-hmm. What I now know is that cannabis is 100% for me. It's just, I'm not going to be smoking the craziest high potency product that's out there. I'm a different consumer. And so I have different product preferences and different strain preferences and terpene preferences. And so I think that's, you know, one of the best things about living in California is that we have all this wonderful access and knowledge and it's available.
It is one of the best things about living in California. It's really great to live in a place where everything is just wide open and being able to understand exactly what you said, that cannabis is not monolithic. It's not just high THC, you know, blunt. There's many, many products, many of them not involving THC at all or very little. So yeah, that whole education process and understanding process of what cannabis is and can be, certainly I think a huge part of this generational opportunity, just like new products, new consumers. So talk to us a little bit about the investing side of things. Your background, I know your brother's background is more coming from the investment side of things. How did you approach the investment side of things and where were you looking to come in at?
Yeah. So Morgan and I kind of credit each other in what we brought to the table. I brought the idea of getting involved in the industry. He brought the idea of putting together a fund. And his thesis, which I think was absolutely spot on, we were maybe a little early for what people wanted, but you have to start somewhere. And his thesis was that people would want to invest into the industry. The industry needed capital in order to continue to grow and thrive, but it's very hard to directly invest into these companies because the diligence process is not just sitting behind a computer screen looking at comps and understanding a mature market. It was incredibly emerging. And so we came together and created this actively investing fund, actively managed fund structure. And my background was in psychology, which is incredibly pertinent to investing. And I also had a consulting and research and market research background. So I was always working for companies, trying to identify new product opportunities, new market segments, ways to defend their market segment and their market position. And so, you know, I had seen a number of consumer trend shifts, including over-the-top viewing, shifting from the cable world into, you know, Netflix, Hulu, everything that shifted. I was part of the consumer shopping e-commerce experience where I remember when I was first doing work and consulting for Luxottica, trying to get people to understand how to purchase things online and how to get comfortable doing so. These are huge shifts that people don't remember, but I consider cannabis to be just another one of those huge shifts. So I bring more of a qualitative perspective to this whole thing, looking at entire markets, consumer behavior, and thinking about the adoption of everything. And so that's, you know, Morgan's kind of the more analytical, quantitative mind. I'm the more qualitative, kind of bigger picture. He gets really focused on the details. And so it's a great combination of coming together. So that's how we decided to participate. And for us, it was just, cannabis wasn't, to your point, it wasn't just one thing, it was many things. And for us, investing in cannabis is, I always thought about it as you have the plant in the middle, and then you have all of the infrastructure around it. And so how can you invest in all of the ways that you either support the cultivation, manufacturing, processing, distribution, and retailing of the plant? Or how do you support the consumption of the plant so that consumers can have a better experience? And so that's how we have approached investing. And it involves everything from technology solutions to hardware, to consumer devices, to brands, to complete verticals of cultivation, all the way through to selling a product to the consumer. So,
and how do you decide what to invest in, who to invest in, who to invest with? Is it kind of the story that they're telling, the product? Is it the people that you're involved with? Does it have to be both? Can it be one? How do you guys approach that?
You know, it's a thing that investors say is you invest in people, and it's a thing investors say because it's the absolute truth. And every time we've seen an amazing concept, but the team has been a question mark, if we've ever gone down that road, even if we've, you know, we'll put certain guardrails in, like, this person's not a CEO, they are a R&D person, but they're the ones who got the company off the ground. You sometimes can put something in place where we're going to place this investment and immediately go down the path of finding a new CEO. And usually, and that would 100% be a conversation you have with the founder. But, you know, unless you can really execute on that, it's got to be about the team. And the team can be great people, but if they struggle on the business side, or if they're very business savvy, but they struggle on the, you know, on the product and innovation side, you've got your gaps that you've got to be very mindful of. And so every investment that we've had that has struggled, it's been because of the people. And so and every investment that's been a success has been because of the people. The markets are tough, and you can have a great product or a great concept, but if you cannot execute on it as a team, it doesn't matter. It just sits in a black box. So,
yeah. Absolutely. When I saw that you majored in psychology, I was thinking to myself, what a perfect major for the cannabis world. Like, if you can't major in cannabis investing, you might as well major in psychology. So we had a guest on the podcast maybe like, I don't know, more than 6 months ago, less than a year. And they were talking about how they view the cannabis industry as a 14-year-old who just grew a mustache. In terms of psychology, how do you look at the industry? Where do you see it? How do you see it growing? And how do you feel like it's grown into itself thus far? And where do you see it going, like, in its next formative years?
Yeah. So it's great that you said that, because I do think the industry was a tween for a while. And that was, it was kind of a funny time to be in, where it was like a little uncomfortable. It was growing faster than its like close fitted and everything, you know, all this stuff. I think right now where we are is we've got an 18 to 20 year old on our hands. We've got someone who's got the time under their it, you know, they've got some time in the world, mm-hmm. probably think it's smarter than it is. But it is at that point where it's ready to run. Yeah. And there are kind of artificial things holding it back. What's holding it back? Banking regulations, little but big setbacks, like the Biden administration with that symbolic move of letting staffers go because they had consumed cannabis. I mean, I have no patience for that, by the way, but I think, and in the misdirection of that and the misinformation, I'm very frustrated around some of the things that have happened with this administration. And I think that, you know, I'm hopeful that someone with real information can get into a room there and help to educate and inform, because I think it's all stemming from this notion that cannabis is a gateway drug, which we know is just not, it's just not the truth. We know there are circumstances that get people into gateway situations, but it's not cannabis. Cannabis isn't, you don't have cannabis and then you're like, let me get the hit of heroin. You know, it's just not how it goes. We know it's because of pills that people can access through pharmaceutical means. And that's a far worse gateway than anything around cannabis. Anyway, I digress.
Preach.
Yeah. So I do think that that's where we are. It's, you know, we're about to be our own thing. And it's, you know, how I know this is that everyone's starting to talk about cannabis as the new consumer, new wellness market. It's not just cannabis anymore. It's now being pulled into the broader discussion of lifestyle, wellness, and pharma. And I think that's where we will land as an industry, where different aspects of cannabis will live within those different sectors. Like, we're going to have cannabis that is pure pharma. We're going to have cannabis that's wellness and nutraceuticals. And then we're going to have cannabis that's all lifestyle, all consumer. And that's great, because you know what that means? It's unlocking even more potential for this plant. It means that more people will have access in many different ways, and it'll have different, as we used to say, you know, in my old world, need states that cannabis can meet and support in our lifestyle. And I believe it's all beneficial. So I'm excited about it.
It's interesting, you know, you talked about the Biden administration and your disappointments with it. And I think, you know, a lot of cannabis investors, a lot of cannabis fans would feel the same way. I know that during the election process, you know, so many people were talking about how Biden's like the only candidate who doesn't support cannabis. Yeah. And then Kamala Harris coming on board, everybody thought that that was kind of going to like balance and even things out and bring some education and bring that awareness that it's not a gateway drug and all these things. It doesn't seem to have happened. But in the meantime, companies like Amazon are coming out and saying the exact opposite of what the administration came out. Is there something happening with these big players, like coming out on the right side of history? Are they, you know, signaling the fact that, look, we're there, it's a matter of time, get on board? What do you think's happening in the broader like marketplace? How do you view it, and what do you think's at play there?
So I think a couple of things are at play. One, just more, the more time we have where cannabis is legal, it's regulated, it's selling through these, you know, very nice channels, people have clarity on what it is that they're consuming and buying. There's a lot of data showing it's getting into the hands of young people less and less. Drunk driving goes down. I mean, there's a lot of societal benefits to legalizing and regulating cannabis. Forget the freaking tax revenue that comes out of this industry, which, as we saw in Illinois, it's eclipsed the tax revenue from the alcohol industry, which is tremendous. Yeah. So, you know, I think that there's some really positive things happening. And I think that those shifts are making it more acceptable for an organization such as Amazon to make a bold move. When you look at the employment data in the US, companies like Amazon are having a really hard time. Companies like Amazon are having a really hard time finding people to get to employ. They need more workers. We are undersupplied on workers right now, which is a wild consideration. Like, when you look back on where we were about a year ago today, the world is just on and it's running, and I feel like we can't keep up. So I think Amazon took a look at that, took a look at the information, got smarter about what it means for people to consume cannabis, and they created a policy around it, because I think they realized they were eliminating a whole workforce because of a very arbitrary line in the sand about what it means to be a cannabis consumer. The most productive people I know consume cannabis. It's the highest achievers, the most dedicated people. I mean, it's just, so it was truly arbitrary what has happened around cannabis. And I think that what it did was it was a business decision that forced Amazon probably to investigate this issue further and get smart on it. And then they made an educated decision. And then I think what happened is what happens to most of us is when you start to understand more and more about the background of the illegal nature of this industry, the racist implications to it, and the lack of access that it, you know, creates, I think that then you can't help kind of but want to lean in on that. And I think that's why we saw them lean in on the MORE Act. Regarding the president, regarding this administration, Kamala Harris has a history of putting people in prison for nonviolent drug offenses. You know, I know she's close with some of the people in the industry, and I was hopeful that she was hearing from them and that she had an informed opinion at this point. I also, you know, have an understanding of the seat she held when she did that. It's not an easy position to be in. So I was hoping this would be a bit of a redemption moment. It was certainly something that came up in the process of getting elected. And I think that may be exploited because I don't see the promise being carried through. And, you know, Biden never promised much about it. He said a couple of things, I think, again, during the election process. But it's something that I'm frustrated by, the stubbornness to be open-minded and to learn, because I think that's counter to the platform that they ran on. So hopefully someone will be able to break through and there will be some clarity there.
Hear, hear. So where do you see the rest of the political process going, you know, as Schumer gets out there and he's tweeting and promising? How do you see it going?
I think this issue polls incredibly well. You couldn't see, our country has been fairly divided for the last few years on almost every possible issue you can contemplate, including how to manage through a pandemic. But one issue that we are fairly united on is that legalizing and regulating cannabis is a net positive, and we're substantially in support of it, no matter where your party line is. I think Schumer's been grandstanding on this quite a bit because it's a very popular thing to do. He's getting a lot of attention on him. My whole thing with any of this is like a little, you know, less lip service, more action, a little less conversation, a little more action, as Elvis as he sang. And so I just want to see things happen. And I'm a little worried when we, you know, one of the things I've learned from my great policy advisors, like Ethan Nadelman, is like, we're all trying to move the pendulum further and further in the direction and hoping it doesn't swing back as far as it was. And so part of me feels that it's a little bit better just to kind of push it along rather to try to overreach and then miss. And so, you know, he said, we're not going to go for safe banking. We're going to go for, you know, we're going to go instead for the big legalization effort. And my whole thing is, why can't we just take baby steps? Why can't we decriminalize so people can stop being put in prison for this? And why can't we get safe banking? Because I don't think a lot of people acknowledge or understand that banking is not an issue for the large MSOs. I mean, it's a pain for them. They have to work hard to have the banking relationships they do. Their cost of capital is higher than it should be, yada, yada, yada. But if you're talking about an equity applicant trying to get a bank account, I mean, that is not happening in the infrastructure we have in place. So there's a big difference between being the big corporate cannabis, which I'm fully in support of because we need our own big companies. We don't want it to just go to pharma and spirits and all the other groups. We want to build our own. But then we also need to support the smaller and newer operators. And banking is absolutely an equity issue if you really step back and think about it. So I think it's a little bit of a swing and a miss what's been going on, but I hope they'll take a step back and focus maybe step by step and get some of these important pieces in place.
Yeah. Speaking of the bigger MSOs, how do you see it developing? And within this kind of developing legal unclear picture, you know, it seems certainly like it's going to be more like a state-by-state approach, and the MSOs are going to have a little bit more time to develop this moat, to develop their kind of advantages. Do you see it like that? Or how do you see the MSOs growing and kind of the sector at large growing within this developing picture?
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see it continue to roll out state by state. I'd like federal decriminalization because of all the issues we just talked about. But I do think state by state, because I always go back to this. Every state that rolls out a legal and regulated program, it can take a year to 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then you open the door and then you have to fine tune it because it's never right. It's just never right. Even though we have all of these case studies to look at, every state is so different. And so you have to think about how it goes. So can you imagine implementing a federal legal program?
Right.
The ways that could go wrong are you can't count them. So I would rather see the states continue to go and go and go, and they unlock their programs. And then at some point, substantially, we figure out how do we do this from a federal standpoint. That's my personal take. I also just, one of the things I like about the way this goes state by state is it's not the most efficient, but it creates jobs in places where industry has left. And I think about our company in Massachusetts, Ascend Wellness Holdings. We opened a cultivation and processing and distribution facility in this town called Athol. We opened it in this old tooling facility where they had gone on strike over 20 years ago, put their tools down and walked out, and industry was dead in that town, essentially. And this was when I first toured that facility, it was like a ghost ship because all of the things had been left there and untouched for 20 years. And when one of the things that I got really excited about when I was there was meeting a lot of the local people who were so excited to have industry coming back to their town, so excited to be getting back to work and in such a cool industry too, to participate in cannabis. So they had these t-shirts made that were, it was really cute. It was like, our old mills are going to pot. And I thought that was a really cute thing. But, you know, coming from Buffalo, New York, coming from places where the economy has not always been on the up and up. I mean, now I live in San Francisco. It only seems to go up, but even in spite of the contraction we saw a little bit last year. But I think that it's nice to see the localization of job creation and the ways of participating and building a whole new industry. And so that's one of the benefits of not having full federal legalization and the state by state opening of these markets.
Yeah. Yeah. First of all, I appreciate all the energy and insight you're bringing. This is not the first time that, or this is the first time, but I don't want it to be the last time. I love kind of like the insight that you're bringing and the passion. What do you see in terms of like looking at the landscape going forward? Who are the players that you feel like are going to be able to withstand, not just like on the financial side and not just on the product side and not just on good management, but all of it together, who do you feel like is rising to the top and how many players do you feel like that there is room for? I know this is kind of a big question, but how do you feel like it develops and how many MSOs or how many of the big players stay the big players? And how do you think it looks as kind of the bigger corporations from other sectors start coming in?
Yeah. You know, so right now there's probably 10 big players and the consolidation is continuing. Like what we saw with Trulieve and Harvest coming together, that was a pretty big merger. And so I think we'll see a few more of those. It's such a big market and I feel that we have not even tapped the potential of it because we're just now, one of the interesting data sets I just saw out of Headset is not only are sales going up, but the volume of sales are going up. And so what that's telling us is that more people are consuming cannabis, not just the same people coming back buying more cannabis, but more people are consuming cannabis. And they're finding, to our point at the beginning of this, they're finding the ways that it works best for them. And so I think that we have not even truly untapped the potential of this market in terms of getting some of these new consumer segments to really understand where they fit and where cannabis fits in their lives. And I think these new form factors like beverages and patches or even the gummies that we're all enjoying so much, I think all of those things will help to unlock new market segments. But I think that we could at least have, you know, 5 to 10 big cannabis players continuing on because I think there's just that much market share. And I think one of the things we're learning about the MSOs as their earnings keep coming forth every quarter is that they're starting to differentiate their strategies. And so they may play these markets differently, just like you would see in any other consumer segment. So, you know, you have the Curaleaf, which is clearly going full consumer, huge reach, like they're going wide. And then you have something like Ascend Wellness Holdings, where they go deep, not as wide. They're more focused and concentrated. And then you have GTI, which is just extremely focused on, you know, fiscal prudence and balance sheet, well, you know, having a strong and shored up balance sheet so that they can make strong moves when they want to and do so, you know, in contemplating their cost of capital. And so, and I feel like they're very focused on, you know, the vertical as well. So with brands. And so, you know, I think someone's going to focus more on the more medical side of things, or maybe it's Columbia Care, you know, they already do. And so I think we're going to have them start to settle into their different aspects of the market. But I think, yeah, we'll see probably 5 to 10 big ones across the U.S. and just across the U.S.
And let me ask you what, because some people feel like it's not even worth getting into some of the smaller players. Like if we look at the companies that are going to rise to the top, it's going to be the bigger players and maybe they'll acquire the smaller players. Do you feel like there's reason for the retail investor to kind of suss out of those like second and third tier of the cannabis companies? How do you look at that part of the sector?
I do. I think, I mean, it's all about on the public side, it's going to be all about just reading through the filings. And I would look at the companies that are focusing on getting there in terms of their EBITDA and their, you know, gross margins. And because that has been the key to success in these other companies is how you manage your cash. And I do think some of these other, like, kind of, there's like the top five, the big ones. And then there's like this a whole other spectrum of MSOs and operators. And I think they have some, like, I think they're a great buy. I mean, I'm not suggesting anybody invest. I'm not giving any advice, but to me personally, like, that's where we're directing some of our capital, is because the growth rate of these, kind of the second tier or that other part of the spectrum, it's not even a tier anymore. It's really kind of a continuum. But I think that there's real value opportunities there. And, the way that these names have traded down since, you know, February, it's a great time to get into the space, because I don't know how many more times we're going to see this retrenchment, where if we do have some of these things change, like the banking reform and when New York turns on and when everybody decides this is a great industry to be in. And when you look at the health of these companies versus other consumer companies, it's like, at some point this is going to catch on. And so, you know, when we, in January, Morgan and I were like, oh, we would have liked to allocate a little more into the sector on the public side, but everything was running really hot. So we've been using this time to, you know, establish further into the space. So.
Yeah. I think the people that are still positive are doing that. Do you feel like this valuation, this figuring out this place in the marketplace, do you think it's a matter of just like a catalyst coming and getting it back to a balanced place?
Yeah, I think we're just a capital deprived industry. I mean, when you look at how money moves through the sector, and then, you know, Credit Suisse kicked people off their platform for owning cannabis stocks, or said that they could stay on, but they had to sell. So you had like a group like Wasatch unloading $100 million worth of cannabis stocks. That's not easy to do in these markets. They're very thinly traded. There's not a lot of liquidity. And then it just kind of, there's, I just always say it's a thin bench right now. We don't have a lot of players at the table. And so it just doesn't move the way it should. If you look at the Canadian names, which have access to institutions because of where they're listed, which is the irony of all ironies, is you have to, I think as Ben Kovler says, you have to go to Canada to buy US names. You have to, if you're a Canadian LP, you access the US invest. I mean, it's just the most bananas thing in the world, but it is what it is right now. We all get the opportunity to establish our positions in these big companies. And I think they're going to, it's going to be an amazing growth story over the next few years, but Canadian LPs, definitely, you can see what it looks like to have institutional capital flowing into a space. They're trading at 10 times sales. Most of them have zero EBITDA versus the US operators, which do have EBITDA margins. And, you know, they're trading at low multiples at this time. It's low. As Morgan says, we're in the growth at a reasonable price range, maybe even getting down into value, which is absurd when you look at the growth rate of this industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Emily, it's really been a pleasure and very edifying. I hope to talk to you again soon and catch up with your new insights on the sector, but it's really been a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
It's so great to meet you, and thank you so much. This is fun.
Thanks so much for listening to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. Subscribe or follow us on Seeking Alpha, Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or Stitcher. And we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other investors find our show. If you have feedback or questions, we'd love to hear from you at Rena plus the plus sign CANPOD at SeekingAlpha.com. That's RENA plus CANPOD at SeekingAlpha.com. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next time.